Hey everyone, before we jump into today's episode, I want to remind you that registration for Opticon 2022, Optimizely's annual flagship conference, is still available. The event will be back in person this year in San Diego, California from October 3rd through the 5th. So please go to optimizely.com/opticon to save your seat. Again, Opticon 2022 registration is still open. So if you haven't already, be sure to get your tickets now at optimizely.com/opticon and hope to see you there. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Optimizely podcast. I am your host, Laura Dolan, and we are joined by Griffin Cox, who is a senior technical product manager here at Optimizely, and he is going to talk about a major component of our DXP today, feature flags. Welcome, Griffin. How's it going?
Hey, I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Let's just dive right in. I know there's a lot to unpack. So let's start out by telling us a little bit about your background and your history with Optimizely.
Sure. So I've been with Optimizely almost 4 months now, but before joining Optimizely, I was actually a customer of Optimizely's. I worked at a fintech company first as a software engineer for about 4 years, and then I became a product manager before I switched jobs to Optimizely. And while I was an engineer at that fintech company, I needed a tool that could help me prove the value of this technology. I felt it would be good for us to use in terms of performance and conversions and all that stuff. And we had a homegrown tool, like I'm sure many of our listeners do, for this sort of experimentation. And it was woefully inadequate and very hard to use. So I made the case for Optimizely after comparing it to many of our competitors, including Adobe, which we actually already had. And it proved itself many times over. And then I ran our experimentation program at that fintech company for about a year. And then I figured, I love this product so much. Why not work for the company behind it? So here I am.
That is awesome. That's like saying how much you love the iPhone. You're like, I think I'm going to go work for Apple. And then you end up getting a job with the company, the product you believe in. That is really, really cool.
That is a bit of a dream come true for sure.
Absolutely. That is an amazing story. You're one of the lucky ones just to get to work on a product you believe in and still get to work with your passion every day. So that's awesome. Quick question for you, Griffin, not to go off topic, but are you a fan of the Big Bang Theory?
I wouldn't describe myself as a super fan, but I have seen it. And I did notice the name of this episode, but I'll let you explain it.
Yes. So Fun with Feature Flags is in reference to Fun with Flags, which is a segment on the Big Bang Theory, where basically Dr. Sheldon Cooper and his girlfriend, Amy Farrah Fowler, do a web series called Fun with Flags. And basically they talk about vexillology, which is the study of flags and the different animals that are on flags and different states and countries and what different flags mean. So I noticed we had, you know, feature flags as part of our products. I was like, okay, I have to do a podcast called Fun with Feature Flags. So here we are. And we won't be talking about vexillology today. We're going to be talking about a very different type of flagging. So I'm going to turn it back to you, Griffin, and tell us, please, what is feature flagging?
Yeah. So simply put, feature flag is a split in your code where you either do one thing, a different thing, or perhaps many other things. You can think about it conceptually a bit like a light switch, at least in the most simple cases, where you can control a feature or how it functions, how it's displayed to users remotely if you're using software like ours. And it really gives you control over the feature when it's in production. It enables experimentation on that feature, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. And it can also help you in the development process as well. So I'm happy to jump into any of those topics. Just let me know which first.
Yeah. So if I'm interpreting this correctly, it sounds a little bit like a toggle switch. Am I right in assuming that?
Yes. Yeah. It's in the most simplest case, it's on or off. In the more advanced cases, it's on and how versus on and how a different way versus potentially off. So you can get a little bit more complex with it, but thinking about it like a toggle, totally a great way to go.
Cool. That helps me understand a little bit more. So what are the various approaches to feature flagging?
Yeah. So feature flagging, even if like if we have a developer listening, they may not know the term, though they may. It's kind of an industry standard term now, but they definitely know the concept. And so in its simplest form, without a tool like Optimizely, usually takes the form of a constant or a value that doesn't change in the code. You set the value to true or false usually. And then in your code, you reference that constant and you say, you know, if show shopping cart icon, then, and then the code that shows the shopping cart icon. Else, don't show that code, right? And that is the most rudimentary sort of feature flagging example. The problem with using a hard-coded sort of feature flag like that is that to release that feature flag, you need to go through your software development lifecycle. So you'd have to write the code, test the code, get it reviewed, get it deployed, maybe do a post-release check and bam, it's out. And there are so many points of failure in that process. Even if you don't run into a point of failure, you can, it's still usually a slow process unless, you know, you're a company like Google and you got it all figured out, but then you probably have your own feature flagging solution. Yeah.
True, true. So what does feature flagging have to do with full stack? How are they related?
Yeah. So if you take that concept and you basically make it remote, so you don't need to go through that software development lifecycle. You have a nice UI where you can just turn it on or off with a click or change the way that the feature is configured by typing in a few words and then again, another click and boom, you're off to the races. We saw that as integral to enabling our developers to really experiment honestly on their own without experimentation, kind of like formally in mind. Like you don't need to do metrics to make the most to make the most out of feature flagging. You can, for example, limit the risk of a deployment. Like, so if the feature has a bug, you just turn it off, you know, it could turn off in minutes instead of potentially hours, or if you have a problem even longer than that. And so developers really liked the concept. And since we've done feature rollouts, which are essentially feature flags, we just call them rollouts. We've kind of expanded on that subject to not only enable safer development and deployment practices, but really also enable developers to roll out a feature to just percentages, parts of their audiences. So it's kind of crazy now that I look back that so many times I released a feature as a developer, I released it to 100% of traffic. So if something was wrong, 100% of my traffic saw it, right?
Oh my gosh, no pressure.
Yeah, a lot of pressure. And so, you know, even then I was looking for the right way to release it to maybe just a beta group of users that maybe are more resilient to problems, to bugs. And maybe that wouldn't hate us. They'd just send us a message saying like, hey, something's broken. You should look at it. So you could roll out to beta groups, or you could just say, you know what, let's just roll it out to 10% of the overall traffic. And then let's look at our errors and see if that traffic causes some errors, in which case I'd turn it off before I considered turning it up. And so that sort of rollout, that gradual rollout over time has also been really helpful for teams as they work on experimental features. And to answer your question in full, it's really, we took it yet another step further and now do experimentation primarily on feature flags. And so any flag can be set up in with any configuration, it can be on or off, but then you can add a layer where you essentially release the same feature on with this setting, on with this setting, on with this other setting, or maybe off, all to, let's say, 25%, 25%, 25% of your traffic. And then you can let the customers essentially show you what the right configuration is rather than needing to rely on your own sort of gut instinct. I could give you some examples, but does that make sense?
It does make sense. So that leads me to my next question. How does feature flagging fit into Optimizely's history of digital experimentation? Because that's really what we're all about, is A/B testing, multivariate testing. So I was wondering how this dovetails into that.
Yeah. So have you ever heard our story from 2008 about how really Optimizely supported Barack Obama's presidential campaign?
I've heard a few things about that and I need to know more because that is so cool.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite stories to share. So essentially, in 2008, in Barack Obama's presidential campaign, obviously he had a lot of interest in his policies and from his party, but it was kind of a question of how, like, what do we want to present on the page to get volunteers to sign up to support it or to donate? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of analogous to what a lot of companies want to do. And in most spaces, it's like, how do you increase conversions? You know, kind of generally. And at the time, there really wasn't an easy way to do this and measure it all in one tool. And that was really the birth of our first product, Web. But before I kind of get into that, you know, we helped the Obama campaign with kind of a quick and dirty solution where we were able to test three images versus mm-hmm. three videos, each with one of four different calls to action. So one image, for example, was a color image. Another one was black and white with his family, the videos, and then the calls to action could be like, join us now or learn more, sign me up or sign up. And so there were 24 sort of combinations of content and calls to action. And the question was, which one would lead to, you know, the highest signup rate? And the team, Barack Obama's digital team, took a guess, which ended up being wrong, actually, which we'd love to hear here at Optimizely.
Right.
You know, as long as you find the right answer eventually, I think you can learn it as much or more from being wrong. And essentially, what came out of it was that the best combination was him with his family. So, uh-huh. You know,
yeah.
and a learn more. So it was a bit less aggressive than sign me up, right? So people maybe wanted to learn more than just, you know, plop down their email address and dig in, commit to signing up, right? And so roughly, if you assume that the improvement had stayed roughly the same for his entire campaign. So this experiment was only run for a segment of it. But if you essentially assume that it had run for the whole thing, then roughly 10 million people signed up over that period of time. And if they hadn't run this experiment, if they had run with the combination of content and call to action that they were planning to, it would have been closer to about 7.1 million signups. So it's a difference of about 2.9 million email addresses. So the signup rate was much higher. And typically, volunteers actually, you know, became volunteers at about 10% conversion rate. So that 2.9 million additional signups essentially translated into about 290,000 more volunteers for his campaign. Wow. Well, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if we stop there, that would be a clear example of experimentation really leading to some good decisions and good outcomes. But even in terms of donations, the average donation was about $21 during the length of the campaign. And so 2.9 million more signups actually translated into about $60 million in projected donations. So that's a lot
fantastic.
Of money. It's a lot of additional volunteers. And, you know, in our own small way, we contributed to the success of his presidential campaign. It's kind of exciting.
Really exciting. Every little bit counts. And it's amazing how the hypothesis was wrong. And how it just goes to show you how it's so important to just test different variables, even if it's just changing the color of a CTA or if it's in the first person versus the second person. It's amazing the different combinations and the effect that it has on people, because you and I are consumers. You and I are online every day. We're getting emails, we're getting CTAs, and what causes us to click on different things. And it's just so cool to think about, like, when we're on the other side of it, like, what is going to get in front of our audience? What's going to get ahead of them and what's going to affect them the most? So that is so cool that we had such a, I don't want to say a huge role, but at least, you know, we had a role in that, and it's a case study that we can leverage going forward. So that is really, really cool.
Yeah. So in the grand scheme of Optimizely's history, we took that experience and turned it into a product. We went 0 to 1 in a sense, and basically brought a new technology to the marketplace, enabling web-based experimentation with eventually a WYSIWYG editor or a what you see is what you get mm-hmm. sort of drag and drop editor. So yeah. Not only did we kind of make it a standard, but we also enabled non-technical folks, so not developers, to make those kinds of changes with our web Optimizely web product without potentially needing to involve developers. So, you know, we've continued to kind of build on that. That was our first kind of major 0 to 1. And then of course, mobile was starting to take off around 2010-ish. And we then started to support mobile apps with mobile experimentation. We were the first to do that. And then it became increasingly important to support really advanced experiments that required server-side experimentation. Mm-hmm. So we were also the first to do that. So here at Optimizely, and I'm, you know, I was shocked to hear this too, but we consistently deliver new solutions to the market. And I'm definitely thinking about what our next one is going to be. And what our next major iteration of that server-side full stack product builds on our feature flagging capabilities, combines them with experimentation so that all experiments in full stack 2.0 coming soon, all experiments will be based on feature flags, which allows you to roll out a winner without needing to go through your software development lifecycle again. So, you know, we continue to innovate and kind of ask ourselves what's next. And so it's an exciting history and I think an exciting future.
Yeah, it sounds like it's saving a lot of steps. And I just want to circle back to when you were talking about WYSIWYG, and we drink our own champagne here at Optimizely. So I actually edit our brand pages through WYSIWYG, and it's such a trip because you basically just hit the edit button and you're editing on the actual web page itself. And then you click out of it and all your changes are saved. And it's so convenient and so streamlined. And I love it. I hope more companies start adopting that going forward because it's such a cool type of technology that I've never even worked with until I got to Optimizely. So I love that.
Yeah. And some of the biggest tech companies out there have been doing this sort of thing with their own proprietary solutions for some time to varying degrees of success. But what Optimizely does is really make it accessible to everyone, mm-hmm. Particularly customers with a lot of traffic, because it does take, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of users sometimes to detect a statistically significant difference in the land of experimentation. Feature flagging may be a little bit different. Feature flagging can certainly benefit companies of all sizes, but certainly in the experimentation size, like the bigger you are, the faster you can reach an insight. And the more you can increase conversions in terms of like experimentation velocity as well.
Very cool. So where are we going next with this? Do any of the recent acquisitions relate to feature flags?
Yeah, good question. So if your listeners have been following Optimizely's recent acquisitions, you'll see that we are quickly becoming a leading DXP. So a digital experience platform, which really needs more than just experimentation, although we are a big part of it. So relevant to, I think, this conversation, about a year ago, we acquired a CDP, Zaius, now known as the Optimizely Data Platform, or ODP.
Yep, I'm fully aware. I came from Zaius.
Awesome, I didn't know that.
Yeah, came from that acquisition.
Yeah. Yeah, so then as you know, calling Zaius a CDP alone, I think is not mm-hmm. quite doing it justice. It is also a connector platform designed to really pull and share data with tens of tools, including Adobe Audiences, Shopify, MailChimp, HubSpot, lots of popular platforms. So I think a good example of this is being able to pull in an already defined like Adobe audience, combine it with your Shopify sales data if you're a retail e-commerce site, and being able to combine it also with your first party data, so what you know about the customer, all into one segment. And so our leaders here at Optimizely recognize that sort of capability, that advanced segmentation, machine learning-based segmentation as well, as really powerful and core to our desire to be like a full DXP. Early on, we knew that we wanted to integrate ODP or Zaius with our experimentation products, including full stack and web, to really unlock some new targeting capabilities. So while both web and full stack have audience builders built in now without this integration, they are relatively limited compared to the advanced capabilities that ODP offers out of the box. And so by combining these two products, we're going to enable our customers to target users more easily with less development effort, but also more specifically, so you can run some really more advanced campaigns in terms of personalization in web, more advanced experiments in full stack, for example, and then even target lists of users and those segments again in full stack for feature flags. Really is a powerful integration, and that is coming this year with announcements to come in Opticon in October.
Awesome. Yeah. And I recently had the opportunity to test a new segment builder in beta mode with our CDP. So that was actually really cool that I got to see it from the back end and see how it actually works and things like that. It helped me understand the product a little bit better. And this has helped me understand what we're doing a little bit better as well, Griffin. So I appreciate you breaking it down and kind of making it a little bit more digestible for our audience, because I know this can get really technical really quick.
It can. These concepts, they maybe on the surface seem really simple at times, but they get complex really fast. And so when you're talking about replacing an image on a page, you know, that we've streamlined basically as much as possible with our web product. But when you're talking about basically experimenting on different algorithms that power an API server side and using full stack to do that, gets a little bit more complex, and you need engineers to make sure you're measuring the right stuff and that you're doing it safely, right? But we here at Optimizely strive to make it as easy to run as many kinds of experiments as possible. And I think most importantly, to reach insights or stat sig as quickly as possible. And we are definitely the leaders in that with our multi-arm banded algorithms, our stats accelerator, which those could be episodes kind of on their own. So we'll save those for another time. But, you know, we are all about getting customers to value as quickly as possible. It sounds maybe a little cliche, but something that really powers everything we do.
Absolutely. And it's definitely a priority of ours, you know, for our audience to get the results that they want in the quickest time possible. And our tool will help them get there. So it's everything we can do in our power to empower them. So I appreciate all the work that you're doing, Griffin, and that team is doing. Excited to know more. So if our audience wants to know more about this stuff, where can they go?
Yeah, so I think the easiest way to for them to learn more is to follow the link I'm hoping you'll put in the description.
Absolutely, I will.
Cool. Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful, but yeah. Essentially our developer docs are fantastic. If you're looking to learn more, we have videos on YouTube. We have podcasts like this. Mm-hmm. We try to reach our market as through as many channels as possible. So lots of different ways. You know, if you search Optimizely, even on Google, you will find plenty of resources for all of these different things and for the rest of our DXP platform. We, of course, haven't talked about commerce. We haven't talked about CMS. And I gather you've talked about those on other episodes.
There's so many different components of our DXP. We could talk about it all day. So
yeah, it's really exciting. And over this next year, one of our highest priorities is to integrate our products. So, you know, we spent a lot of time in this podcast talking about full stack and web, our experimentation products, integrating with ODP or our CDP. But I'm excited to see how it fits into our CMS, how it fits into our commerce offerings. Because a lot of our customers, you know, want to experiment and, you know, haven't picked up our experimentation tools yet. So I think more to come in this next year. It's one of our top priorities.
Absolutely. And they're adopting one of our major values, which is never stop improving. And I'm a big believer of that when it comes to anything you do, whether it's work-related or life-related. I'm always wanting to learn. So yeah, I love that that's one of our biggest priorities. So I'm proud to be a part of that.
Yeah. And I think not to speak for our CEO, but I believe he said this before, you know, if you're not digitizing your company and optimizing using tools like ours, you know, you're really missing out.
Exactly.
You know, especially one effect of the pandemic was just the move to e-commerce accelerating rapidly. The move to digital in general accelerating. And, you know, increasingly people buying their groceries online, right? Consuming streaming content online, not, you know, through DVDs, although those were kind of out the door soon anyway. But, you know, a platform like ours really just helps people get the most out of their migration to digital. And I'm really excited to be a part of it. And again, happy to be here.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, I will put that link in the bottom of the description. This will be every episode gets a blog. So when you are following along with the blog to this episode, just hit that link and go learn more. I'm definitely going to go learn more because I want to understand this stuff. I appreciate you being a resource for us today, Griffin, and thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure. Really happy to do it again.
Thank you, Griffin, and thank you all so much for tuning into this episode of the Optimizely podcast. I am Laura Dolan, and I will see you next time. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Optimizely podcast. If you'd like to check out more episodes or learn more about how we can take your business to the next level by using our marketing, content, or experimentation tools, please visit our website at optimizely.com. Or you can contact us directly using the link at the bottom of this podcast blog to hear more about how our products will help you unlock your digital potential.